Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome to 51 First Dates.
I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy.
And we are doing an experiment.
And talking about dating.
And love. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Cheers.
Cheers. Hi, everybody. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy, and welcome to 51 First Dates, a podcast where we try to make dating in the time of the pandemic, you know, semi-manageable or not dating, whatever it is. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for rate, subscribe, reviewing, and engaging with us on social meds, etc. We love you guys. I think I'm just trying to bring some pep into my voice because I am not feeling the goddamn pep today.
I mean, Liza, I think same. I realized I was speaking like a robot. You know, we're going to bring a little pep. We're going to bring a little, you know, cynicism as well because it's a tough time. It's a tough time, especially here in America. I mean, and everywhere. But be nice to yourselves. Liza, that includes you. I want you to be nice to yourself. You can talk however
I'll try.
Oh, at least we have a great episode for you all here today. Yes, to echo Liza, first and foremost, thank you for engaging with us on Instagram. I feel like I'm like, you know, on this mission to, you know, find a way where we have more of a connection with you guys that doesn't just exist on Mark Zuckerberg's platform and a secret Facebook group. You know, it's not going to be a whole to-do, but whether it's a newsletter or some of you thought pen pals would be cool, if you want to be a part of our community as it grows, I kind of hate saying our community, but, you know, if you want to just stay in touch with us more and give us feedback about what you'd like, shoot our email 51firstdatespod@gmail.com. Shoot us an email there and just say add me to any lists you start. I may make a short couple minute Google survey to see what you all want, but thank you for sharing emails and just being willing to give us feedback on what would make this a more exciting place, because we are small but we are mighty, and I think there's a lot of solidarity among the listeners here that could be nice.
For sure. In that vein, please do follow us at 51 First Dates Pod on Instagram and join our secret Facebook group. We will continue to like post any updates there. Also, we're going to get into our consumption corner, but please follow us on Patreon if you are interested in our batch takes this season. We have a lot of fun there. We have a heated disagreement on Victoria. No, I'm just kidding. They weren't heated at all. I was just wrong. The more I thought about it and read about it this week, I was like, oh, I'm just fucking wrong. That was just the wrong. Like, I just, you know.
I don't. However. Okay. Well, actually, I'm not going to say anymore. Tune into the Patreon. You can
go to the Patreon.
It's all about, we're focusing on building a community. You know, this is neither of our full-time jobs. So you can join for as little as $1. We really appreciate you supporting us monetarily. But we just kind of want to also just get people over there and have you join the community. It's on Patreon right now. It may move, but just, yeah, we did all the business. But I realize I never explained why this is an exciting episode, Liza. I will give the rundown.
Oh, oops. I probably interrupted you while you were doing that.
Oh, you did not. I totally just went on a tangent about Instagram because I've been having fun. I'm trying to post more on Instagram, 51 First Dates Instagram, because I don't know why. Like we should. And I really do like hearing from people that who listen to this podcast or who just follow us. It's fun. Anyway, okay, why is this episode so exciting? Well, one, consumption corner. We're going to have a hefty consumption corner today. Lots to watch and discuss. Two, we're going to do a listener question. And then three, most importantly, we have a very special guest on, Marla Renee Stewart. She is a sexpert for Lovers adult wellness brand. They have very great vibes you could check out, but she's many more things than that, too. She is a co-founder of the Sex Down South Conference, a sexologist, a professional sex, intimacy, and relationship coach, and sexuality educator. She created something called Velvet Lips. It's a sexuality education company, and it's really about empowering people, you know, all people, to express themselves and work on how they express themselves when it comes to sex. And she's just a really amazing human, and shared really interesting perspectives on all sorts of sex questions, including some listener questions that you submitted. So just really thank you to Marla for coming on. That interview is later in this pod. But for now, Liza, shall we consume or discuss?
Consume? Let's consume. Okay. Do you want to go first?
Yes, because mine are not as robust as yours from, you know, our little chit chat before the episode. Okay. So I, you know, consumed. And when I consume something I really like, sometimes I just need to post about it on the internet. So if you follow me, you saw me post this, but I consumed a movie called Promising Young Woman that is pretty fucking incredible. And I strongly recommend. And actually, it's going to sound like I'm cheating and I really don't have much to say this week, but I would recommend, I will say, trigger warning, sexual assault and rape. I would really recommend not reading a ton about it before you watch the film. Liza, did you see it?
I haven't seen it yet, but I've been hearing about it forever. Like, I feel like it's one of those movies that has all this like indie film buzz since it was at Sundance last year, and I've been like dying to watch it, and I still haven't, even though it's been out for like a month or whatever.
I think it just came out in terms of like being able to watch it at home. So I don't think you're behind.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was earlier. Okay. That makes me feel better because I've been really excited about it.
Yeah. Because I tried to look for it the weekend previous. So basically, for anyone looking for it, you know, I will say, while I mentioned those triggers, it is an incredible, I'll also say the word like avenging something for a friend. Like, I really don't think you should read a lot about it before. Know that it's buzzy. Know that the end is like something I just want to talk about so badly. I think we should do a bonus episode. But should it give a little more like color to what this is? Emerald Fennell is the director and writer, and she is showrunner of Killing Eve, or was the showrunner of Killing Eve.
Also, did you watch the season of The Crown?
Oh.
She plays Camilla.
I forgot. I didn't watch it, forgot that connection. Yeah,
it blew my fucking mind because I was like, I Googled the director because I was like, who is this director? Like, whatever. And I was like, oh my God, she looks so familiar. And I recognized her name from Killing Eve. And I was like, oh, her face looks familiar. Like, who does she look like? And then I was like, oh my God. Like, I clicked on her link. It blew my mind. Talented woman. She's really, really good as Camilla. A very strange part to play.
I need to see season four of The Crown. I just need to catch up. What a fucking great show as well. But Liza, so the reason I'm pretty sure it may have just come out, or at least like easier to find if you don't have access to like screeners or weren't at Sundance, whatever. If you want to watch it, sorry, all over the place, because I just want to talk about this movie. I thought it was so powerful. If you want to check it out, just go, I guess, to Amazon or Apple. It's rental. So it's $19.99, but I recommend you do it. Treat it like a night out at the movie theater. I just haven't seen something that like showed more than told, made you think about what you were thinking through it. And then just like a phenomenal performance by Carey Mulligan. It's
a great, it's also like a great way to support female filmmakers, like of whom there are so few, mm-hmm. you know, to pay for their movies. Like if you can, you know, it shows like it sucks that this has to be a thing, but there's just, I think, still a lot of people who don't think that female filmmakers can be profitable. Yep. And like any dollar you spend on supporting their work is like going to show that that's like fucked up and dumb and old.
And
you know, it's a good one to pay for, I think.
Agreed. Especially because it like, you know, I think, I don't know what the decision making process was, but I'm assuming it became like, well, let's release this for like awards contention this year. But it didn't get even the like indie theater push it would have. And I think because there's so much you want to talk about after watching this, especially the end of this film, it would have had a bigger moment if COVID wasn't a thing. So
100%, yeah.
Support it or check it out. And I just want to talk about it. But
I was like fully planning on watching it tonight because I've been in this just like movie kick, which I'll talk about. But The Batch is on tonight, and I may actually just watch it instead of Batch and like watch Batch tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a bad feminist choice to watch batches out of this film that I really want to watch.
No. I don't. It's, I mean, you got to be, I feel like the 3-day weekend we're recording this on the Monday, Martin Luther King Day. I feel like it's a, if you're having any scaries, I know you work today, Liza, but I don't know. It's dark. It's like you want to process it a little. I don't know. No, yeah. Just do what you want on this Monday evening.
Okay. We'll feel it out. Cool. That's a great one. And extremely highbrow. And not, I mean, I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying, like, you said you didn't have juicy content consumption. I think that's like the juiciest.
Yeah, I think that's it. The only other thing, so I feel like, what else? I've been watching older movies too. The only other thing I will recommend, or not, I don't know if I recommend it, but Tony is really liking it. And I'm going to recommend a show that I haven't seen yet to myself. Okay, hold on. So there's a lot more French content being talked about because of this show Lupin on Netflix, which I do enjoy watching. I don't think it's the perfect show for me, but I'm the whole time I sit on the couch and I try to not look at the subtitles and see what I can understand. And then I start repeating the lines in French. So poor Tony. It's just like I'm using it to practice my French. But I also
for context,
think
Kimmy's very good at French.
I am very the lead actor Omar Sy is like I think he's, you know, very highly decorated and known in France. But he's very good and I really like watching him too. And the story, I don't know why I'm being kind of anti. I would recommend that. But my recommendation in this vein to myself and to us, though I haven't seen it, is that I really want to start the show Call My Agent, which is another French series. Have you heard of it, Liza?
I have, and I've heard it's fucking awesome.
I've heard it's great. I think it's about an agency, but I think it's more of like a half hour or a comedy versus Lupin, which is like a heisty, which I like the heist part. Anyway, I'm just like, check out – it's a really good time to check out shows in French, A of all, but – also just in a maybe a language you speak or want to practice. That's my other thought because totally. I just have liked to
or
be,
just like yeah another country when you can't travel, you know, like that's really appealing too, of just like cool or just like a different culture, you know. Jeff's been watching Borgen, which is
supposed to be so
Danish
good.
Or Swedish Danish I think, and it's like a political drama, and I'm not really watching it that much, but I've been like catching little bits and pieces, and I'm just like, oh, I don't know anything about Denmark. Like, this is just like really interesting. If it is Denmark, it also could be any of the other Scandinavian countries. Please don't at me. It is Scandinavia.
I think you're right. I haven't seen it, but I've heard a lot about it, and I think you're right.
Because someone also just recommended a Swedish show to me, and I'm worried I'm fucking them up. One of my really good friends is Swedish. She would be very disappointed if she heard me saying these things. Sorry, yes, if you're listening. Cool. Yeah, I like the idea of just like I'm really craving some escapism, which is going to be lols with the content I'm about to recommend. But the some kind of like different culture, different country, something, even if it's not like gorgeous shots of you know, the Champs-Élysées or whatever, just like something that makes me feel like I'm not stuck in a tiny apartment in New York.
Yes, very pro.
Which is a good segue to my content because I'm about to recommend two like super New York-y shows. Not shows. One is a movie. Okay. So both of these things are I'm just in love. Oh, wait. First of all, I will get to those. I watched The Sound of Metal on your recommendation.
Oh, yes. What did you think?
Which was so fucking good.
Liza, I'm so glad you thought so. I feel like there's buzz around Riz Ahmed, but I thought the movie was good. And it, what did you think as an editor with the sound design too? I was just like, it was
the sound
boring.
Design was incredible. It's about a character who goes deaf. He's a heavy metal drummer and he goes deaf suddenly. And there's other than the music, some of the music he plays, there's no music in the movie, which is crazy. Like that's a crazy thing to do. And it doesn't bother you at all. I didn't even notice it until it was like, I was an hour and 15 minutes in. I was like, oh, there's no music in this. There's no score. There's nothing. It's like, it's so good. It was so well done. It's also on Amazon Prime right now. Like you can watch it for free if you have a Prime membership. And it was just super beautiful, super sensitive, like super well made, like really powerful. But I just really like subtle. Like it wasn't. I felt like so many times it could have beaten you over the head with like, he misses music because he can't hear it anymore. And it wasn't that. It didn't like do any cheap emotional tricks. It just was powerful. And like, Riz Ahmed is going to win an Oscar soon. He's such a good actor.
I mean, and I really think he should for this. But I haven't seen enough this year. I will say I would also recommend, well, I guess after you see the movie, he's being interviewed everywhere right now. I think it actually leaked that he's married. He like accidentally let that come out that he's secretly been married. He's so fucking
sweet. I was
going to
say he's so fucking hot.
He's so hot. He's so cute too. When he like let it go, he's like,
British in real life?
He's British and Pakistani. So okay. I don't know where he grew up.
He's an English accent or?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which is also fun to listen to. And
I mean, he's a fucking smoke show, to borrow a line from, what's his name? Jason.
Yeah. Jason, I forgot. Thank you, Liza. That just made me giggle. Bring smoke show back or reclaim smoke show. We'll try. But Liza, you or anyone who's seen the movie should listen to, because I feel like there are some spoilers. He was on podcast I like called Keep It this week, and they talk about like these, first of all, his preparation for the role, which is really extensive, and then like using these devices where the director could just turn off his hearing. I don't know, it was like,
wow.
I was almost like, does that make the performance less impressive? Because like, but I think it was just an exercise. I again try not to like blow up everything, but I would recommend like listening to him.
That's
he's such
cool.
a sweetheart too.
It was like the first thing in a long time where I saw and I was like, oh, I kind of miss being an actor. Like his performance in that.
Yep.
Which I never feel anymore. Yep. I have not felt that in years.
You'll feel it from Carey Mulligan, I think, in Promising Young Woman as well. I was like,
that's
this
cool.
would be a fucking dream to play. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so
that's really,
complex.
Really cool.
And anyway. Sorry. Yeah. Totally. Just got
not
excited
at all.
About Riz.
I mean, we got to talk about content because no one can go on dates right now. Okay, I'll be brief about my other two content pieces, but
no,
they're
please.
Both extremely New York-y. As I said, the first I want to recommend is a series on Netflix called Pretend It's a City. Have you heard about
this?
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yep. So I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, my God, Kimmy. It's like, I watched the whole thing in one night. It's like seven episodes that are 30 to 40 minutes. Like I wanted to stop the whole time because I wanted to save it because it was so good and I couldn't. It's not going to be for everyone, that being said. So it's a documentary series directed by Martin Scorsese about his friend who is this woman named Fran Lebowitz, who's a writer and just like a New York figure. Like she is just the most New York human you can possibly imagine. She's like in her 70s. She's like just a kind of grouchy like woman who wears oversized blazers and glasses and just is a comments on everything. And she's kind of just like a misanthrope and she thinks everyone is annoying, but she's so funny. She's like a humorist, you know, like that's, mm-hmm. I think like she's a writer and humorist. She's like a very sought after like dinner party guest and late night guest and all of these things. And she's just so weird and specific. And so Martin Scorsese just interviews her about stuff and they walk around the city and she talks about New York. And she's so interesting and so funny. And I just could not stop watching her. She's just like a fascinating human. And it makes you love New York. It makes you, you know, it made me just feel like so excited for when New York comes back and so like so in love with this place, which is how I want to feel about it and sometimes have a hard time feeling about it. And it's really well made and it's visually really nice. Like it's mostly her sitting in like a dark bar talking, but you know, it's like Martin Scorsese, so it like is nice to look at. And yeah, I mean, she is who I want to be when I grow up. And she made me want to be more honest. Like she just made me want to be less self-deprecating and like more unapologetic too, which I just think is like a constant struggle of mine. She made me want to like talk less. So at one point someone was asking her about wellness or Martin Scorsese was asking about wellness and all this other stuff. And she was like, ah, it's so fucking boring or something. And I was like, oh yeah, this is boring. I want to stop talking about my body and what I'm eating and what I'm not eating and how much I'm drinking. I'm just like, it's boring. I'm done with that as like a big topic of conversation amongst females. Like we're smarter and, you know, just like,
fuck yeah.
She just made me want to like read more and think more. And since I watched that, I have just been like feeling more creatively awake and engaged and a little bit less like I need to watch Top Chef for 16 hours in a row to like feel okay. So that was nice. And also it's really funny. And then similarly, but again, if you don't like love a very particular brand of like old grouchy Jewish New Yorkers, you're not going to love this, but I think you might. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think if you're not sure who Fran Lebowitz is, you'll see her. She's like an iconic person from New York. You will immediately.
Yes.
Recognize.
She's a great like raconteur. Like she just tells these great stories that they're not even like, nothing happens. She just, the things she notices about people and places, it's just like so funny.
It sounds very soothing.
Yes, it really is. And like they just, mellow music, like truly, she's, all of the shots were, they shot it before the pandemic, like 2 years ago maybe. And so she's just walking around the city and everything's normal, which also gave me like a sense of calm that I really appreciated. So the other thing I really want to recommend is a movie called The 40-Year-Old Virgin, V-E-R-S-I-O-N. And it's a movie written and directed by this woman, Radha Blank. She's been like a playwright and she was a writer on a couple shows, Empire and some other show. But this is her first movie as a director and she also acted in it. And it's about a kind of like down on her luck woman about to turn 40 who decides to become a rapper. And it's so fucking good. I'm obsessed with it. This woman, it's like the perfect combination to me of comedy and like pathos. Like you fucking are obsessed with her. You love her so much. You want the best for her. There was a scene I had to fast forward through because it was so like awkward and I love her so much. It was like you really give a shit about her. And the like music is really good and like the rapping is really good. And it's really well written. It's really funny. There's a couple things like, it was her first movie and there's a couple things you can tell. Like she has like a gay best friend who's a little bit of like a stereotype. But like there were some things where I was like, I don't know. But it also is set in New York. It's shot in black and white and it's really beautiful. And there's just a lot of like really nice surprises throughout. It was so cool to watch. And it was funny. I was watching it. Like, I had no idea about this, but a lot of it was shot at a theater that I used to work at. So I had like this whole wave of nostalgia for like my old life. And yeah, it just is like there's not a ton of really good comedies around and it's not a straight comedy, but it is really, really funny and really enjoyable.
That's the kind of the movie I'm ashamed that I haven't seen yet. I've only heard incredibly great things. It's yeah, that will go right to the top of my list. I'm so glad you reminded me that I haven't seen it.
It's great. I feel like it's great if you like Fleabag and I May Destroy You. Like I feel like this woman, Radha Blank, fits in with like those cool like auteur ladies.
Yes. Yes.
And it feels so like it just feels so New York-y and cool. And it's another movie like I think similar to Promising Young Woman that potentially would have gotten more buzz if it had been able to have like some kind of theatrical release. Mm-hmm. So give it a view on Netflix.
Yes. Can I, this is not really in the spirit, but can I tell you one thing I didn't enjoy as much, like yes, in my highbrow journey? Have you seen First Cow yet?
No, but I have heard about it.
Yeah, I've heard that it was so good. Well, I had heard and then I watched it and I found it very slow, beautiful, but slow. And just like compared to like even just the way you just spoke about 40-Year-Old Virgin. And I don't know. It's just like, it's very interesting to me what, it's also a male-centered story. It's just interesting to me the stories that still get the buzz. Like there are many Promising Young Woman critiques for men out there that I just feel are missing the mark. Not that I know the mark, but I think I know it better than people with different genitalia who have, anyway.
Well, it's because women who make movies have to make perfect movies or else women can't make movies.
I feel like we need to do Patreon, like, you know, spoiler filled breakdowns of 40-Year-Old Virgin and Promising Young Woman if people want to do a film club.
Yeah, just like drunk kind of feminist thing. Movie club.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have to get drunk.
We have to, yes, yeah. Again, we're building out the community. That's an idea. Hold us to it if you think it's cool. Sorry.
Okay, there's one more thing I want to recommend, but I'm going to do it so fast.
No worries. I love this.
Okay, great.
To the listeners? So, probably.
I'm looking up the name of it because I can't remember what it's called, but it's an article in The New Yorker, and I'm sorry, and I know that is not cute. Okay, I have the title of it. The only thing, and here's the other thing, and if everybody wants to fucking slap me, that I totally get it. It's a 40-page New Yorker article, which in regular pages is like 100 pages. I read it over the course of 3 days.
A big Fran energy, Liza.
Right? No, truly. It was after I watched it. I was like, I need to read something every day. But it's by Lawrence Wright, who's like a big nonfiction author. He wrote Too Big to Fail and a ton of other like long, deep dive, investigative journalism-y books. But it's called The Plague Year. Mm-hmm. And it's all about... It's like the story of COVID from when it first appeared in China to the end of December. And he's an incredible writer. It's like reading a sci-fi novel. He writes so well. It's like very compelling. But he also he examines it from all these different sides, you know, governmental, like personal, economic. He talks about, he interviews mask manufacturers, he interviews people who lost their job, he interviews obviously frontline workers, he talks to economists, he finds these really interesting stories. He talks about the man who made the Moderna vaccine, who I'm now in love with. He's the cutest person on earth, I'm pretty sure, and his life story is kind of crazy. And it just made me love scientists who, like, he's not gonna make any money from this, like, he just... Like, it's a very powerful story. I won't tell you guys too much about it. But I think that overall, like, in the last couple of weeks, especially where everything's been scary, it's a very scary article. So I'm not saying it alleviates that. But it just absolutely highlights the essential need for good central government and how much our government really did fucking fail us. And it obviously, like, hey, this is not an upbeat recommendation, but I just think there are so many ways reading it where I was like, oh, I understand this better, and I understand better now, like, what leadership, why leadership is necessary. Like, it's not just symbolic or whatever. So it's a like, I know this is an annoying thing to recommend, and I fully get if you all want to slap me through your earbuds right now, but it was a really good read, or I wouldn't be annoying you.
I think, you know, I'm trying to do less Twitter consumption, more like reading and book consumption and like Atlantic articles or New Yorker article consumption, you know, where you're getting, you know, really quality information and really quality writing. So I will, your recommendations mean very much to me. So I will undertake that. We'll see how I do.
They also, if you wanted to subscribe to the New Yorker, they also put it on like an audio, they do like an audio reading of all their articles now. Oh,
yeah, that's so great. That's so great.
Which is nice. This particular one is like 3.5 hours, but Jeff listened to it on a series of walks.
I mean, I like that. Maybe I'll listen to it. But your point is so good, and it weirdly sparks a tiny bit of hope in me. I saw a headline, I forget if it was Washington Post or New York Times today, but just, I of course I was on Twitter, so my changing of consumption is not going super well right now. But it was like, what's so kind of, the fact that Joe Biden's plan to approach this pandemic is so fucking obvious is actually just so sad. It's like, we could have done so much more. It's not like he's coming in with this brilliant idea. It's just that nothing was done. So as much as things are going to get worse, I mean, like 400,000 Americans have died now. It's just, we're so outraged by the Capitol or the denial of the election results. I think the rage, and we're also, many people are outraged about the COVID, you know, impacts, or the lack of leadership involved with that. I mean, that's why Trump didn't get reelected. But I just think it's, you know, with all that darkness, there's a tiny bit of hope that I'm getting, even if the vaccine rollout stinks, even if whatever, that there's this new administration that actually is focused on, now it's their problem, not Trump's problem.
Completely.
So they have to make an impact, and they're focused on actually doing something about it, which gives me a little hope.
Totally. And like, even in just reading this, I was like, oh, there's so many things the government can do and should have done. And now hopefully we have someone that will do it. So that's good. You know, these people are not powerless, and they fucked up so many things, and so many people did not have to die. Like, it would have been a pandemic under any leadership, but you'll never be able to convince me that, like, not this many people had to die.
Yep. It's so dark. It's so dark.
Sorry, guys. This is a dating podcast.
Dating podcast. So you may notice, look at me just running away from the darkness. You may notice that Carlin, our new dater, is not here this week. But I just wanted to quickly shout out a post in our secret Facebook group from a PhD student. And we have a couple PhD students. We had some chiming in, which I was like, go women getting your PhDs. Yeah. I feel honored you listen to us with our babbles. No, but really good points about, you know, if you listen to last week's episode, Carlin's date with Mr. PhD, he was not super cool about having time. He was very busy with his PhD. We were kind of all chatting about, like, we were almost all making excuses for him or being open to the fact that he could have excuses. But I think some really good points are made of, like, I'm a PhD student. I would never think about saying things like that. I'm a PhD student. Like, those are just red flags. They have nothing to do with how busy you are, which I really appreciate.
Yes, 100%.
I think I liked – there was Stephanie in our secret Facebook group said, no excuses for men being jerks in 2021. So all new dicks and no excuses for men being jerks in 2021. Okay, great.
Yeah.
You know?
yeah, it is a vibe.
But, yeah, we love you, PhD students. Just wanted to shout that out. And we're not surprised. Female PhD students have no problem managing their romantic, personal, social, and education and career lives. So shout out to you. Okay, shall we do a listener question, Liza, and then get into our interview with Marla?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. Would you like me to read it? I shall. Once.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, great. So this came in through our email. Hello, ladies. So I've been seeing this guy for almost a year now, and he told me very early on when we were just friends that he doesn't want kids. And if he were to have them, he would adopt. I agree with him since A, I don't want kids, and B, I can't have them. We agreed not to have them. However, his mother has been pushing boundaries and keeps pressuring him and me to have them, knowing full well of my situation. She says there are more options and so on. What are your thoughts on how to approach this situation? I want her to stop asking and just accept she's not going to get grandchildren from us. This is tricky.
I mean, I'm impressed you guys are having that conversation, having dated for less than a year. That is like a fucking sign of maturity that I don't have.
I know. Same.
I feel strongly, especially because your relationship is on the newer side, that you should managing your partner's mother should be your partner's responsibility at this stage. If you guys had been together for, you know, many years and you had a super well-established relationship with her, if you guys were married, or if you were in a position where you were further along in dating, like, obviously you and your partner are very serious for having these conversations, which is great. But I do think that in the shorter term, when you are dating someone, there can be a lot to be lost in putting any kind of, like, strangeness in your relationship with their parent. I think you should say to your partner, like, it is very important to me that your mom stops asking about this. It makes me feel weird and bad and goes against what we've told her, and I feel not listened to, and I feel disrespected since this is biologically not possible for me. So I need you to have, like, a serious conversation with her. Like, that's very important for my, like, you know, ability to have a relationship with your mother. Can you please manage this? Like, I feel like it's almost like at work, where, like, you can't go to your boss's boss. You have to go to your boss and be like, this is an issue. You go figure it out for me, because that's not my job to, like, manage up that much. And you know, again, down the line, if and when you guys get married or are talking about adopting kids, you know, you can probably start to have those conversations with her yourself. And I would approach them by just really coming at it as, like, this is how it makes me feel. It makes me feel bad and sad. It hurts my feelings. It makes me, you know, however it makes you feel. I don't want to put feelings into your feelings box, but I think now it's like, yeah, he's got to figure that out.
Yeah, 100%, Liza. I couldn't agree more. I think, like, zooming out a little bit to your earlier point, first and foremost, sounds like you're in a really healthy relationship. Being on the same page about something this complex that is, you know, something a lot of people have strong feelings about. You know, having children in the future is really impressive. And it's just great that you're on the same page. You know, that's like hurdle one out of the way. So then when it's not your parent, I agree. And especially this early, it really becomes your partner's responsibility. And it sounds like, again, you have nice open communication with your partner. And I completely agree with Liza, focusing on sharing how it makes you feel. We don't know how it makes you feel, but I feel offended for you that, you know, even if you didn't want them, I'm sorry, even if you did want them, wanting them or not, if you can't have them, it's incredibly rude to push it. And I feel like for those who aren't, you know, thinking about kids, but are maybe just feeling pressure from parents about, or a pre-in-law, like about marriage, or just, you know, you're single and you have a parent or an aunt or a grandmother or anyone, I'm making them all women. Men can encourage marriage as well. But if you're feeling pressure around these things, I think it's just really, you know, important to remember that just because it will infuriate you, it will bring bad energy at you, but just because someone else wants a different path forward to you doesn't mean it's the right one. And that's the most basic example ever. But we talk all the time on this podcast, and I just feel like it took me so long to realize that all of the like self-flagellation I was doing to myself for not having a boyfriend had way more to do with what other people like wanted for me than what I actually wanted throughout my 20s, you know?
Totally.
It's just, I'm trying, because Liza, you answered this perfectly, so I'm kind of trying to broaden it to just say, this is a really good year, especially after 2020 when so many people's lives shifted, you know, completely outside of their control, to remember that you're in control of your life, your narrative, and the things that other people put pressure on you to have, even if it's not directly, even if it's just the way that one friend posts about her engagement or her wedding all the time, and you're like, good for you, but not for me. Just, I think, like, checking in with yourself about what you actually want. And then in those moments where someone's coming at you, adding pressure, just, you know, it's almost like dealing with online trolls. If you've ever had an internet troll or, you know, just asshole in your life, just trying not to react to that and taking care of yourself, which,
totally, again,
pretty general, yeah. But
no. And remember that, like, what other people want from you is 100% about them.
Yep.
You know, yeah. It's not about you. Like, this is something my therapist has to remind me of all the time. It's like, cool, someone wants you to be more this or more that or more whatever. It's because of their insecurities or their, like, unconscious desires or the things that are missing from their lives. And I think the pressure for grandchildren, for a lot of people, it's because the grandparents want to, you know, remember the joy of having their kids. It's about wanting to have a purpose, wanting to have something to pour their love into, which is all very special. But it's about them, and it's not about you. It's not there. I think rarely they're thinking about what would make you happy. Like, that's a lie. I'm super, like, I think rarely people who want to be grandparents are thinking about whether or not it's the right thing for their kids. I am not saying this shadily. My parents, because, well, they already have grandkids, so they're not putting any pressure on me anymore, and they know I'm a lost cause. But, like, you know, they don't do that. But so I'm not, if they're listening, I'm not shading my parents at all. It's just, I've heard from a lot of friends that this pressure is starting to happen, and yeah, I just would remind them all, and you, dear listener, that it's not about it's about your boyfriend or your partner's mom.
Yeah, and have your partner have that conversation, and maybe, like, you can have him go into that conversation and, like, try to sniff out what it is about grandchildren. Like, yes, it's probably like having cute kids in your life, but maybe it's about seeing you both more or something like that. And then you can find other ways to connect with her, you know, if that's it or whatever. If there's a way in this conversation he has where he explains why it's really hit a limit, which I really just feel like it is, the way you're writing this, like, you wouldn't write into us if it wasn't, you know, hitting a point where it's just unsustainable for you to have to just, like, brush these comments off. So see if he can also, you know, try to come up with other solutions for whatever this need is within her. I don't know. That's just it.
Totally. And good luck. Let us know how it goes. But everybody, I think that wraps our Porsche.
That wrapped our Porsche. Now you get to our Porsche. Porsche. Our Porsche 911 car. Okay, whoa. But now you get to go to the really juicy meat of this episode. We are so excited to talk orgasms, to talk porn, to talk all sorts of sex and sexual health with Marla coming up right now, after this ad break, actually. Mm-hmm.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And now we are so excited to be joined by Marla Renee Stewart. Marla, thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to talk about sex with you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about sex too. I'm excited to talk about sex like every day, but whatever, it's cool.
That's incredible. That's the right kind of energy right now. I feel like everybody is, so many of our listeners are emailing us and they're like, I have been alone in my apartment for 10 months. Like, it's a good time to, I think, talk about sex, maybe like rethink some things we want to like change about our sex lives, bring in some positive energy, all of it. So we're so psyched to talk to you. We're thrilled you are here. But first, as always, we'd love to know, do you have a worst first date story?
Oh, I have plenty. I have one, I'll go through, I guess I can tell maybe a couple, then you can figure out which ones you want to go through, but they'll be really brief. But one first date I actually had with a couple, they were actually two women in a couple, and they were looking for a third. And I was like, this seems very interesting. I'm going to go ahead and go on a date. And we went on a date, and it was not very good, because one of them was like, they were not out to their parents, and they were like over 40, weren't out. And their partner just kind of like tolerated it. And basically, like, when the family came over, they would remove all of their pictures together and like do this whole thing. And I thought that's pretty gross. Yeah. And so that was a horrible first date for me. And then another first date that I thought was interesting. So I went out on a date. This was in San Francisco, was a while ago. And I went out on a date with this guy, and he was a hip hop rapper, MC guy. And I went to his performance, and the performance was, you know, it was pretty good, pretty decent, but I was very convinced that like, hey, I am going to, we're probably going to sleep together. Let's do this, right? And so I went back to his place, and I found a book. And, I mean, I don't know if it was like a journal or what, but basically he had like cut out my like MySpace picture or Facebook picture at the time or something. Like, he printed it out, like, had it like in his journal, like, and
oh my god, I am horrified. Sorry, you guys all can't see Liza in my face.
Yeah, you can't see our faces, our jaws are on the floor. That is some horror movie bullshit.
So he had my face, and it was like, you know, in the journal and like written about, and I don't know if I was supposed to see it or not. I'm guessing I probably was not supposed to see it, or, you know, his place was just kind of, you know, sometimes guys' places are a little in a disarray. And so I, anyway, it's super creepy, right? But like, I kind of like a little creepy. So I was like, let me just go ahead and go forward and see what happens. And anyway, we ended up having sex, and he made the worst sex noises. Oh God, they were so bad. They were just, it was like, it was just like this noise that I couldn't wrap my head around. Anyway, I couldn't wait to leave. So, that was a pretty, no more dates after that.
Yeah. I could see that. Like between the journal, diary, book, like serial killer plotting device and the grunting, like I think I totally get that. But
right.
So another question we so cheesily always ask is about your relationship to relationships. And it could also be about your relationship to relationships and sex. That feels more appropriate. However you want to take it in terms of, you know, just how you think about or have thought about historically romantic relationships, dating, and sex.
So it's so interesting. I think to do what I do and to think about how I've navigated relationships over the years, I realized over time that I had been doing it just sort of all wrong, right? And it wasn't until maybe the past 5 years that I've been like, oh my God, I found the key. But before that, my relationship to relationships were, I love to be in love. I love to love. I love to like take care and like, you know, adore. And I really give an overabundance of love to my partners. And so my relationships to relationships were very much me taking care of people. And I realized I cannot do that because I do that for my job. I need someone who's also going to be able to hold their own. And I literally just learned that not too long ago. And now that I've learned it, I'm like, oh my God, everybody needs to know this. I wish I would have known what I knew, you know, what I know now, right? My life could have been so much better. But I learned a lesson. I'm here now. I'm great. But I really wish that I would have known sooner. And I think a lot of it has to do with, we grow up with the relationship trope of like, relationships are work and relationships are hard and this and that. But actually I am so happy and I don't have to do that much work. It's not that hard. It's actually very easy when you find, the person that is for you. So, that is the one thing I really want to normalize, like healthy communication, healthy relationships where it really does not work. It does not, you don't have to work that hard. You really just have to be and accept someone for who they are. So, and hopefully, you know, your crazy is compatible with their crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's it.
Totally. I mean, yeah, amen. It's such a, I feel like it's such a process that so many people have to go through to go from that thing of like, you know, justifying people's behavior and thinking that it's somehow on you to fix people or to help people, like especially women who I think sometimes get burdened with, like, women, I'm being heteronormative, women who date men, you know, get so often burdened with like their mental health because they weren't taught to deal with it. And I feel like I've just seen so many of my female friends go through similar things where it's like, oh, I can't make them happy. Like, you know, like they have to be happy on their own. But yeah, it's sad that we have to do that. But it's also such a powerful process when you like make that realization.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marla, I love what you said about normalizing, you know, relationships not being that work. You've said it much better than I just reiterated, but like normalize, that really resonated with me because it's so glaring. I feel like the way that just healthy relationships aren't normalized anywhere or rarely are normalized. And I think that, you know, also makes me think about, you know, healthy relationships to sex and pleasure. And I must shout out on your Instagram bio where you have, you know, your pleasure activist and sexual strategist, also obsessed with that branding. Yeah, I love it. Especially like sexual strategist, just like, I'm like, I need that. But how did you, you know, find this work? What, you know, got you into it, kept you with it? How has your career evolved? We'd love to hear more about that.
Absolutely. So I really you know, I think it, all the things just sort of have culminated to these moments of where I've gotten to involve, where I got involved into this work. But I think the catalyst really was when I was in college. I was having great sex with lots of people, and my friends were like having sex, but not like having orgasms. And I was like, what are you doing? Why would you do this? Why would you have sex and not have orgasms? And so it really, for me, I think the what resonated was like, oh, you know, lots of women are asking for their pleasure. They're like stunted in their communication, especially to men around sexuality. A lot of my friends were stunted around their sexuality, like didn't know. And I think college is one of those times, right? They're what we call them, like gay until graduation, right? Like, you know, some they would do whatever they wanted and then would graduate and be like, okay, well, I'm actually not gonna do that anymore. There's like, you know, there were so many different things that were happening. I'm like people, and people came to me for advice. So a lot of the times, you know, my friends, they knew that I was studying human sexuality. They were just asking me questions, asking me like, how do I talk to someone about getting, you know, what I want? And like, how do I have an orgasm? Or like all of these different things. And I'm like, wow. And you know, I've been having orgasms since I was a child. Like my friend and I think we were in the second grade, and she had these like, she had like twin beds like in the same room, and we would just like masturbate next to each other, you know? And so it's like, I have been masturbating for such a long time. And I think I'm just a naturally extroverted, open person. Like I'm, you know, I just express myself and whatever it is. And I think that helps a lot of people to be comfortable, like saying that, oh, okay, like I just need to say what's on my mind, or I, you know, I just need to sort of get over that hump or that shame or stigma maybe that has been keeping me from experiencing, you know, pleasure. So yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with me wanting my friends to have orgasms and like ask for what they want and enjoy the college life like I was enjoying it. So yeah, that's where that all began.
It's a great origin story, like helping friends get orgasms or have orgasms. Like I love it.
Well, I feel like I needed a friend like that at a younger age.
Yes.
But it's funny because like that's, I think, eventually one of my friends was just like, oh, you've never had an orgasm? Like, you need to, like, do these things. Like, it was a friend who was like, okay, like, let's get past this. And it can be a really powerful thing. How would you – I mean, okay, I have two questions, but I think one of them is getting ahead of myself, so I'll backtrack a little bit. Can you just tell – for all of our listeners who may not know, can you tell us a little bit about, like, what you do? Like, you work with clients to help, you know, well – I'm not going to say because I just asked you the question. Will you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do day to day?
Oh, yes. So I call myself a pleasure activist and a sexual strategist. And the reason for that is because I formulated my own curriculum around what I call a sexual strategy. And what that is a combination of sex therapy, somatic body work, and comprehensive sex ed. So, you know, sex therapists tend to be very limited in what they can do and how they interact with their clients. You know, somatic body workers, they work with the body. And so I integrate, you know, breath work, touching exercises, things like that. And then I also bring the element of comprehensive sex ed. Like, what does it mean to have sex ed? What does it mean to have healthy relationships? What does it mean to, you know, express myself or come up, have those sex skills or communication or seduction skills that are going to help me in the future? So all of those things I feel like are a great combination. So that is where I came up with the sexual, you know, strategist thing. And so I'm actually going to be coming out with a certificate. I want to certify people into this sexual strategy. So I'm going to open it up and like, because I realize like I feel like I'm the only person who does this. working with clients, and I would love for more people who can, you know, work with people in their area. You know, because I work with people all over the world, but like, yeah, I would love for other people to get this kind of help, and, you know, me not be the only one, you know, doing this kind of thing. So, or people feeling, going into like sex therapy and then feeling restricted because they want to do this thing, but, you know, therapy says you can't do this thing or else you're going to get your license taken away or whatever, right? So it's a complicated thing, but I'm really excited about like introducing, you know, people to it and what it means.
Yeah.
That's so cool. It feels so important.
Yeah. And like I said, it's really around, like, I feel like I tell people I specialize with helping people around seduction, communication skills, sex skills, helping them around kink and BDSM. So embrace that, you know, non-monogamous communities, LGBTQ plus communities. And I've worked with folks in HIV and public health, and I studied that for a while too. So I want to integrate that, you know, into the, I integrate all of it into the work. And I also look to other people in my, you know, sexual communities to integrate that work as well. And so I think from all of those different ideas, then was born a Sex Down South, which is a conference that we have every year in Atlanta. And that is, we're going into our 7th year, and that's 3 days of just learning, you know, sex workshops, anything and everything you possibly think of. And then we have fun and party at night. So,
sounds like a blast.
It's a good time. Yeah.
I think, you know, what's so interesting about your work is that it is, you do integrate so many different parts, from communication to thinking about physicality or breath work, and so many more things that you just listed eloquently. But, you know, obviously I feel like education around sex, around many things, education's a problem in this country, first and foremost. Sex education, also a huge problem. And it sounds like even things that someone like me, who's less, you know, in the know, I didn't realize sex therapy had the limits it does. It totally makes sense that it does. What's your ideal solution? Or is it about the approach to sex education, like on a broader scale, like to get the kind of work you're doing, or at least normalize like learning or being curious about seduction or, yeah, non-monogamous communities and relationships? Yeah.
Yeah, I think coming from academia, I always have like that research-minded, research-focused kind of mind. So for me, it's like, hey, we understand that comprehensive sex ed works. We know that. We know that abstinence-only education does not work. We know that if you are coming from a more conservative community, you're more likely to be faced with sexual challenges. You know, so there's so much research out there, and it's about like, hey, we know these things, why can't we implement them? And a lot of times those barriers are because of, I mean, I live in the South, so it's a big, you know, the Bible Belt. So there's a lot of religious, you know, issues, a lot of religious trauma that people experience, you know, being shamed, stigmatized, because of their sexuality, or because they want to do something that they were taught was wrong. And you know, it's sort of the, stuck. They just kind of get stuck. And so the need to unlearn those things is super, super important. And I just, I really hope to help people just move forward in their sexual journey. But
yeah,
I feel like what was the question?
I was like, kind of, what's the ideal solution, which is totally unfair and an insane question to ask. Like, what do we do? But I think like the unlearning seems like a huge part of it. And not to jump away if you wanted to expand anymore, but I was thinking about someone listening, potentially being like, that sounds like me. Like, I've been ashamed of this sexual part of me. What is, like, maybe there's not one answer to this, but what's maybe the first step to unlearning? If someone's listening right now and they're like, oh, that sounds like me, I have shame around X, Y, or Z, or I haven't explored this or that.
Well, I think one of the first steps is you have to want to learn something. Mm. right? So you, if you want to learn more about sex, sexuality, or an aspect of sex and sexuality, take a class, right? Like, you know, look it up, or, you know, do your best to try to educate yourself. And then that is a process of learning and unlearning some of those things. And I think the unlearning process, you know, you're going to have to find someone to help you. So whether that is through therapy or, you know, the sexual strategy or sex coaching, or, you know, educating yourself in other ways, I think that's the first step is just taking that step and acknowledging, hey, my pleasure, this feels good, but maybe, you know, why do I have to, or why is this bothering me so much? You know, why it feels good. It's usually like, it feels good and it's bothering me. How do I balance this out?
Yeah.
Interesting. And in that same vein, do you find that there is a piece of advice or an insecurity that you tend to see over and over and over again in your work, like a piece of advice you give, or a problem that someone brings to you that you feel is kind of the most common thing that people are dealing with?
Yeah, I would say the issues that come to mind as far as like thinking about my clients are really understanding who they are as people and then who they want as a partner, right? Sometimes I get a lot of people for my clients, I get people who are just like, is this the person for me? And then they're very resistant when I'm like, I don't think it's the person for you. Or they, you know, they come up with something. It's sort of like it's a challenge. Right. And sometimes because I'm not, you know, there are some therapists that are like, oh, just say what the client wants to hear. And I'm fortunate enough that I don't have to do that. You know, like I'm not going to say that if I think that this isn't working because of A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, and J, like it's not working. And from my experience, relationships should be easy. It should not be this hard. And so, so working on, you know, things here and there, wanting to, you know, upgrade your love life, up-level your love life if you want to, you know, find some things here and there. Or maybe there's some issues in communication that, you know, you maybe weren't aware of earlier and now things are starting to pop up because you've been, you know, in the house forever. And so, you know, there might be some things that might come up, but overall, I think it's really about finding who you are, what you want to do. I also have, you know, clients who have trouble finding orgasm or understanding, you know, what their own pleasure looks like or what desire looks like. I've had clients who are really starting to discover what their sexuality is. I feel like that happens actually a lot in my sessions where somebody's like, bing, oh, I am asexual. Mm. Or bing, like, oh, I actually want an open relationship. Or, you know, so sometimes, you know, having someone to help facilitate those conversations and understanding their own sexual relationship identity with themselves is going to be very, very important. And, you know, I think the way to figure that out is through, you know, talking to people, discovering, learning, educating yourself.
Yeah. It's so like, as I hear you speak again, I'm just thinking, wow, like this really human desire or need or want is something that a lot of us feel so weird even like talking about sex, or it's just, yeah, it's I'm not stating any new truths here. I'm just like, oh, this is frustrating. And to kind of you mentioned the pandemic and people maybe living with partners and that changing things. Do you have any advice for people who are not partnered or not living with a partner, or people who want to work on their sexual selves while in quarantine? I'm in LA where we are like fully locked down. So yeah, do you have any advice for that?
Yes. Masturbate in all sorts of ways with all sorts of things. I think that's probably one of the best things that we can do is start really discovering ourselves. I just got my first vibrator like 2 years ago, and I was like, oh my, I've been missing out. This is a world that I had no idea about, because I had been so integrated into my own work with like, oh, my hands, my mouth, my body parts are perfect the way they are. They work just fine. And like, I really didn't think about expanding my own sexuality. And then once I did that, I was like, oh, now I see why people, like why other maybe sex educators are like, you know, have like a freaking ton of dildos or whatever it is that, or vibrators. And I'm like, okay, I see, because now you can learn to do different things with these toys, and you can learn yourself in new ways. And like, I have clients who, you know, maybe refuse to masturbate because they still have that shame and stigma around masturbation. And so I'm just like, buy a toy or two, you know, figure it out. Do you need to be on your stomach? Do you need to be on your back? Do you like to hump pillows? Do you like to hump the corner of your mattress? I don't know. Do you need your hips up? You need, like, thinking about all the different ways. Do you need in the shower? You know, whatever it is. So I think really being able to try to masturbate in different ways will help you expand your level of knowing your body around orgasm, which will help you tell someone, hey, I can orgasm this way, that way, this way, this way. Like, so we have many different options, and we can always sort of, you know, stay curious. But I think for folks who are like single and who, you know, haven't been able to, you know, go anywhere, or, you know, have been just, you know, sheltering in place, I think it's always fun to, besides masturbation and getting to know yourself, you know, connect with other folks, you know, online, or think about what your next steps are when you come out of quarantine or, you know, sheltering in place. Because I have a client right now who's like, okay, I've been doing this for so long. What are the steps that I need to do to get a relationship? Okay, let's work on these things. We're gonna work on A, B, C to make sure when we step out, you know how to flirt, you know how to do everything, you know how to talk to people, you know how to connect, and that's gonna be great. So I think practicing that stuff too is going to help by being in maybe virtual communities, connecting online, and yeah, practicing your flirting. I mean, I feel like,
yeah.
So, you know, I'm probably a bit biased. So it's just sort of like, you know, just practice.
I love that we've been trying to like reframe, you know, dating in times of sheltering in place and online. You know, people are sick of FaceTime first dates. Fine, I get it. But think of it as practice. Like, there is a vaccine. There's an end at some point, hopefully soon. I don't know. But anyway, I like that. Like, maybe that will resonate with some people. It's like, it's practice, you know? It resonates with me. Like, I have a goal.
Yeah, and relatively safe practice. You know, I don't know, get on the apps and just flirt over chat. It feels so low stakes, and it feels like kind of a fun, you know, we're all tired of watching TV. So. So to that point, do you have any thoughts about or advice for people who maybe are not experienced with sex toys and are not super comfortable with them? Do you have any like non-intimidating ways into that world?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think you just have to start off with one. And, you know, I started off with, the reason why I got turned off of sex toys is because I did try like a bullet or something. And I was like, okay, this doesn't really work for me. So I was like, maybe, you know, the vibrations don't really work. But it wasn't till the introduction of the suction toys that really, like, I was like, oh, well, that's different. Let me try that. And so when thinking about our bodies, like as a, you know, a person who has a vulva and vagina, you know, you have to think about your clitoral size. You have to think about, like, is your vulva front facing or back facing? Do I need a pillow to prop up my butt or not? You know, what are the ways that I need to masturbate? Is it on my stomach? Is it on my back? And like the introduction of the suction toys gave not only me, but I think other people a different way of being able to masturbate. So, and being responsive and really having a high responsive rate for that. But I think for beginners, I think, you know, just knowing, I feel like trying two toys, right? One, a vibrating toy, like a bullet or something along those lines, or a shower head, something, you know, and a suction toy. So trying, you know, one, two, or all three of those things, I think can help you have a better grasp on what kind of style or what kind of toy you may need. So that way you can say, okay, I've tried this toy. I like these kinds of toys. So I like the air pulse toys. So I'm going to go for the air pulse toys and see, you know, which ones, you know, resonate with me better. So I think, yeah, start small.
Yeah.
Start small, start with a smaller, and then, you know, as you get more advanced, then you can upgrade your upgrade toys.
And I will second the suction toy situation. I'm easily intimidated by like large sex toys, but that, yeah. I'm very pro suction.
Yeah, it's funny. It's such good advice to just try a couple different ones too, because, you know, I feel like I just didn't think I liked sex toys because I bought one. It was the wrong one. I'd already spent money on it. I didn't like it. I was like, well, I'm not going to try another one for 3 years. You know, it's just like a thing that happens, but it's, yeah, I feel like this continues to be a trend of like just push through and you'll find something.
So kind of adjacent, we have two listener questions, Marla. I'm going to read you the first one and see if you have any advice. Porn just isn't that stimulating for me. Can you suggest other media we can consume?
Yeah, absolutely. So the thing about porn, if that person was probably a cisgender woman, if I'm guessing that correctly, most of the time, porn is coming from a male gaze. So you might just be looking at the quote unquote wrong type of porn. So you might want to find something that's a little bit more in the, a cisgender woman, female point of view, and, you know, or some feminist porn that seems to be really resonate with people like that. And if porn is not your thing, which I have a client, and it's so great because she likes to read erotica. And one of the best solutions that we found was her reading erotica while her husband was like erect, but in her. Right. So, but like not doing anything. And so, being able to sort of, get stimulated and like get connected in this way was very, different, but, you know, you might want to think about, I talk about in the book, The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay, thinking about like, are you auditory? Are you visual? Are you tactile? And to know your seduction learning style means maybe the porn visually is not pleasing. So maybe it's the audio piece. So maybe you want to listen to some audio erotica, or maybe porn is not your thing and you want to do something a little bit more tactile. Maybe you want to do a massage, or you want to do some dancing, or you want to connect in a different way. Porn can, kind of zaps our brain. It kind of short circuits our brains to our genitals. And so you might not like it, you know, for a variety of reasons. But I think, you know, leaning towards maybe something like erotica, if you want something more stimulating, reading erotica, audio erotica, listening to people have orgasms or build up to orgasms can be very, very helpful and useful if you want to try to get off in a different way rather than just watching for the male gaze porn.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. It's easy how, like, I was like, wow, that's a tough question. And then you named all these other senses we have that I just don't think about when it comes to getting turned on. And I will read the second one too. It's funny because it was written in. So this is all caps, the beginning. What is the deal with pubes? And why are we all ashamed and confused by them? So I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, hey, you know, it's so funny because, you know, pubic hair was not that big of a deal until recently, right? So we know from like mainstream porn, you know, pubes were the thing. They were everywhere. And it wasn't, you know, there's some arguing around, you know, around feminism, around the infantilization of women and shaving, you know, the pubes and, you know, to make you look like a little girl or something like that. So I think part of it is, I'm thinking vulva and vagina oriented about pubes. I don't know if it's.
Yeah, a lot of our audience, that will probably resonate with them the most. Okay. I'll just say, like, very specific demographic, it feels like, when it comes to sexual organs, but yeah.
So what's the deal with pubes? Like them, love them, you know, I don't think people should care that much. I think you do whatever feels comfortable to you. If you are partnered, I think it should be, you know, talk about the negotiation. Like maybe they want it, you know, maybe they want it bare, but you're like, I don't want it bare. Maybe I can have it cut low. Or, you know, I think negotiating that is also helpful because you both want to be pleased and you both want to be, you know, you both want to have pleasure in the sexual situation. So I know for me, for the longest time, you know, I have had these partners who are like, you know, Brazilian is like, okay, well, I don't really care that much. And if you don't care that much, that's fine. And then I would get Brazilians all the time, right? And then, but then I would get like ingrown hairs, you know? And then I'm just like, I'm tired of this life. Like, I don't want the ingrown hair life. I'm not about that life. And so I've just decided like, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to put myself through that torture. I want to just let my vulva and my vagina just be happy with its hair. And I'll just trim it down so, you know, you can't inhale it, whatever, you know, like I'll just try to make sure it's manageable so that you can do whatever you need to do and that like it doesn't bother you and it's great for me. So yeah, I think, you know, the pubes are pubes, but you know, sometimes people's pubes can be rough on skin. So in some people's skin are fragile or sensitive. So, you know, I think it's all about negotiating with your lovers and figuring that out.
Yeah. I like that. That's good. You know, the kind of like the energy around pubes, I was hoping, and maybe it's just because I'm getting older, that people were caring less about it. And I like just like, yes, it's a negotiation. It's definitely also still your body and, you know, what makes you comfortable as well. I love it.
As you get older, you care less.
Yeah. I'm like, is that still a thing? And I like love, I'm always like, I'm very hopeful for Gen Z. So I'm like, they must be fine. They're probably each their own or something. I don't know. I've made that up. I have no idea. But yeah. Well, this was great. Thank you so much, Marla. We're ending on pubes.
The best place to end. But Marla, yeah, please tell everyone where they can find you, where they can follow you, all your stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So again, you can find me. I'm a sexpert for Lovers Stores, as well as a sexual strategist for my company, Velvet Lips. and the co-founder of the Sex Down South Conference at sexdownsouth.com. If you want to find me, you can go to velvetlipssexed.com, sign up for my newsletter, or you can buy my book, The Ultimate Guide to Foreplay and Seduction, that I did with Dr. Jess O'Reilly. And you can find me on social media at velvetlipssexed, that's sex without the E, or at One Marla Stewart. Or if you want to go to the con, it's at SDSCon on Instagram or at Sex Down South ATL on Facebook or Twitter.
Amazing. And we're going to link all of that below. So please check out Marla and all of the amazing things she's up to. And thank you guys so much for listening. And Marla, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.